Good afternoon. I'm really telling you a story about what happened, what is happening, and maybe what might happen again in Arizona. It says a community perspective, but it's community in a broader sense, a broader definition. So we've done some really interesting things in Arizona. Anybody here from Arizona? Your family lives there. Okay. No disclosures. I have no financial interests whatsoever. A lot of personal interests. A lot of personal interests, but no financial. In 2012, the Affordable Care Act was passed previously, and the governor's office was trying to figure out what they were going to do, what position they were going to take. Again, you have to realize that Arizona is a very conservative state, but a very conservative governor, very conservative legislature, and I don't even want to tell you that we just elected an even more conservative governor and a more conservative legislature. So I don't know what's going to happen, but there were some interesting things going on in 2012. Basically, the governor's office convened this group of stakeholders to say, okay, what are the issues around the Affordable Care Act? What kinds of things do we need to be considering? What are the issues around Medicaid expansion? What are the issues around if we go for a state plan or a federal plan? So she brought together a group of, there were probably around 40 organizations. She brought together, and we sat and talked about, what would navigators look like? Well, how would we get people enrolled? What kinds of process would be involved in this? And I thought, this is really kind of unusual for a very conservative governor, because not all of us were there that came to this meeting were conservatives. There were a lot of people that were just, kind of left-wing radicals. But she wanted to have a whole discussion around what was going to happen. So she basically made this decision to propose the expansion of Medicaid in the state. And she put a lot of political capital into the expansion of Medicaid. She had to basically stand there in front of the legislature and say, we are not going to convene until you pass this, and pulled in all of her political favors to be able to pass Medicaid expansion. But she also decided we weren't going to go for the state led plan, or the state marketplace, we're going to do the federal marketplace. But the federal marketplace is still regulated by the Department of Insurance. So there were all these players that were talking about what was going to happen. So all of a sudden, she makes the decision, we're going to do the federal marketplace. So all these people that were convening to talk about what we were going to do said, okay, so now what? What's next? How are we going to get people enrolled? How are we going to be able to get things moving? So St. Luke's Health Initiative, who's a community nonprofit philanthropic organization, they continued to convene this group of people and actually expanded it. They were really interested in seeing how we could best ensure that the most amount of people that were going to be eligible for enrolling into the marketplace were going to be able to do it. So we applied for some of the federal marketplace or navigator grants. We got a kind of coalition went together, applied for a grant, got some money. And we wanted to make sure that we were going to maximize how to get people enrolled. So they also funded this organization called Cover Arizona Zona Coalition. It's an organization right now of 600 different organizations. We're like the old trees, communication trees. It's like they sit there and I'll say, oh, we're going to be doing this. Could you send this out to all of your members? And all of a sudden, there's this like tree effect that happens. And we send it out to everybody that we know, everybody who's working with children, everybody who's working with adolescents, all the healthcare providers, all the people that we know that are part of this coalition, those messages go out. So every month they have a thing called covered clips. They send out what's going on at the federal level, what's going on at the state level, what are the issues that are happening. And we basically kind of created this whole network of people that were both from both sides of the political party. because they wanted people to enroll in health insurance. They wanted to see how the marketplace was going to work. You've got hospital associations saying, we really want to make sure that we get people enrolled. How do I get a navigator? What are we going to do? We've got assisters. We've got navigators. How are we going to coordinate all of this? So that was all coordinated through Cover Arizona Coalition. They basically have four leading federal navigator grants, hundreds of navigator organizations, and more than 150 certified enrollment assisters around the state. They have three priorities. They're coordinated enrollment assistance, a lot of public awareness. We have public awareness campaigns like all over the place. Because there was this little bit of seed money through St. Luke's Health Initiative, they were actually putting up billboards, you know, putting up as much information as they can to try to get people to enroll in the insurance. They had a lot of outreach efforts. They actually funded, I don't know if all the other states have this 211 system. It's like for community information. If you want to find out where to get a dentist, you call 211. You want to find out, you know, what's wrong with, how to find a plumber, you call 211. You could call 211 and they get your put in your zip code, and it'll tell you where to who to call, who's a navigator and who's a assister for health insurance enrollment. So first wave, a little over 120,000 people were enrolled, newly enrolled. These were people that were uninsured. 145,000 people were also enrolled in the Medicaid program. So that's a pretty significant change. But it's still 21% of the eligible population were enrolled. So as I said, we had this little tree, this little network. So about a month ago, because the enrollment started, Saturday, we started this whole network. We started this whole campaign again to try to get as many people out, as many people in knowing where to get assistance, where to get to meet with a navigator, or right now we've got the brokers, the insurance brokers, because the small employers network is also opening up. So there's like this opportunity for brokers to actually go in and work. It's interesting because the brokers were not at all interested in this coalition until they kind of figured out that there was something going on, and now they're really interested. They're a big party of our group. So there's still enrollment issues, and some of them were discussed by previous speakers. But there is this family glitch that I think that they're looking at. It's like if one family member is employed by an employer and the other family members are not, and they go to enroll in the marketplace, that they don't, there's not always eligible for the subsidy because of this certain piece of the legislation. The penalty, the Young Invincibles. We had a whole campaign on the Young Invincibles. It was hysterical. You know, they think that they're invincible. They don't need health insurance. I'm healthy. I don't need anything. What are you talking about? Until they break their arm skateboarding or they, you know, they're skiing or something. But the penalty was not very high for the first year, but it's higher for the second year. So we're really putting a lot of effort into our campaign for the Young Invincibles. There's a consumer lack of knowledge about health insurance, like what a deductible is. Like, why do I have to pay a deductible? What is a deductible? What does that mean? So we've done a whole campaign on educating consumers who had never had health insurance. Or if they had health insurance, it might have been when years ago under an employer, and they didn't know that they had this deductible that they had to pay before they were able to use the services. There's also a significant issue around the choice of plan for children with special health care needs, because basically families were said, go and apply for on the federal marketplace, and there was no list of who the providers were on the market, on the plans. So they may have been seeing Dr. Jones, and they say, well, this plan looks like it will work for my family and my children, but Dr. Jones isn't on that plan. And all of a sudden, Dr. Jones, who's been treating that child for years, can no longer treat that child. And that's where all the records are, that's where all the information is, that's where the relationship is. So there's certainly an issue around, you know, making sure that people understand who's in the network. So it's not just network insufficiency, it's also network transparency. Because we're Arizona, you know, there's this whole perception of government insurance and anti-Obama. I mean, we have people who ran against Obama in the last election. I mean, I'd meet them sometime and they go, well, I'm with this anti-Obamacare. And I said, well, what do you think it means? What are you against? They didn't really know. And I'm like, and some of the people that were elected said, you stood for Obama. My opponent stood for Obama, so I'm really opposed to this. And I'm like, well, you're not running against Obama. You know what I mean? It's like, it is just this kind of a strange mentality. There's also a significant issue around the children's health insurance program in Arizona. We had around 40,000 children that were, we have something that's called, we call it Kids Care in Arizona. So it was Kids Care 1, so that's the traditional CHIP program, and then Kids Care 2, because they froze Kids Care 1, so no one else could enroll, and they decided they had a little extra money, but they didn't know how long it was going to last, so they created what's called Kids Care 2. 40,000 children were in the Kids Care 2 level, so it was part of a waiver that they received. So they had 40,000 kids. About half of them were eligible for Medicaid under the new Medicaid expansion. We actually have people going out. There's like a $100 incentive to find those families who were in Kids Care 2 who are no longer insured, because we don't know what happened to them. I mean, it's like we're thinking there's like 20,000 children who were enrolled in health in the CHIP program, and we don't know what happened to them. The Medicaid provider sent out an email or a letter to all the families and said, you know, we really want you to, you can go to the marketplace. You could either go to the Medicaid enrollment plan or you can go to the marketplace and apply. But there's not a whole lot of tracking about what actually happened with them. There's also this, we actually made it into the Georgetown University Health Policy Institute, Center for Children and Family, dismantling CHIP in Arizona. I mean, we're very famous. And it talks a lot about some of the things that happened. The other thing that happened is that, I'm not going to talk too much about oral health because other folks have talked about it, but we talk a lot about how it's not only 6.7% of the children that we knew that were enrolling in, or families that were enrolled in dental care. It's just really low. They didn't know that it existed because it wasn't listed in the federal marketplace. And because we're very anti-regulation in our state, somehow or the other they felt that all navigators and assisters needed to be licensed. So now they had to go through this whole training and licensing process through the summer, and there's a whole, again, in that whole tree of communication. If you are a navigator and you haven't been licensed, you cannot help someone enroll in insurance because they now have to be licensed. There's a lot of, Arizona is kind of an interesting state. There's this giant thing in the middle called the Great State of Maricopa. It's Maricopa County. And it's basically about 80% of the population lives there. And then there's what's called Greater Arizona. That's where the other 20% of the people live. So you've got all this rural area, tribal areas. Then they were signing up for insurance, and there was there's supposed to be this whole network of providers, and found out that, you know, they were lucky they had primary care. Okay, 2 minutes. There's also a premium difference between what families are paying or what individuals are paying in the rural area and urban areas. So where are we now? We're still planning for the enrollment. We started the process last week. I've been getting emails all the time since I've been here about what's going on with that little communication tree. There's also outreach to specific populations and regions in the state, particularly women and families that are living in shelters, the LGBT population. And we're trying to resolve some of those glitches. So even though it's kind of this very interesting conservative state, there's like this whole groundswell of activists and advocates that are working on trying to make this thing work. The other big issue that we're looking at, because we now have this very conservative legislature, is they're talking about rescinding the Medicaid expansion. And we're going, could you really do that? You know, so I don't know. I mean, they're just interesting things. So I just wanted to tell the story. It's a very interesting story. You wouldn't think that, you know, we were doing a whole lot, but we have these 600 organizations that are working together to try to make this thing work.
Great. So thank you. Thank you to everybody. Okay, we left time for questions. Karen, my question to you is, so did you go ahead and do the Medicaid expansion? You said she proposed
yes,
it. You did do it. Okay.
We did do it, but it's, now they're talking about rescinding it.
Okay, that's because so many states didn't do it.
I know.
That were conservative. Hey, ask a question.
You can still go in and enroll, but I have a doctorate in health policy and administration, and my daughter had to enroll in through the federal, through the state plan, and it took us at least 4 or 5 phone calls for her to figure out what plan to choose. It's not an easy process when you've got 3 levels and, you know, 5 or 6 different plans.
I think my son had to do it in Washington, D.C., and it was equally difficult. I don't think this really is conservative or whatever state. I think it's
across the board.
Health, yeah.
It's really about the 211. If you need help with health insurance, call 291-211, or, you know, health insurance has changed, you know, I don't know, I can't remember exactly what they were, but they're very cute. Yeah, the St. Luke's Health Initiative is collecting a lot of data right now.
Okay, great. They've always been in the forefront of sponsoring a lot of good stuff. There's some good MCH past the state people there as well. And any questions? Any others? Yeah, sure. So is that Kathy or Claire? Do you know how to answer that?
So I know some things around the edges of your question. I don't know exactly the answer to your question. I'm pretty sure that the Title X Family Planning Fund, is this right? They can be used. They don't ask about immigration status. So there might be a way to help women access services that are provided through Title X Family Planning Clinic.
Right.
So if that doesn't work, then we'll give you the IUU.
But
I'm working on...
The Medicaid does have a policy they're just coming out with, because there's a lot of the Medicaid medical directors, actually led by Rebecca Gee right here in Louisiana, who's been pushing on this. So you should see more. Plus, undocumented, Title 10, community health centers. And, you know, in some states there's other places, but it's going to get worse. So I would say for your particular state, because there's obviously you talk to your Title 5 director or your Title 10 director, if you have not done that at the state level, or, you know, who else is Joanne, who's head of the Moms Mobile program in Philadelphia, would know. Just in terms of there are people who would know that exact one question. Because you should find the answer, and they should help you vote any of those, right?
Well, I think this race is important.
Yeah, sure.
I want to touch on it for a second. The ACA is a big headline issue right now, but it's not the only game in town. There are other health policy options and opportunities that we need to all continue to be aware of, take advantage of, and leverage in the context of the ACA, especially in the context of so much state variability.
Right. See, because all the federal programs now are under kind of assault. It's the same for Ryan White, Title 10. And in one sense, if you're a state like Massachusetts, I mean, yeah, we want to integrate it because we don't have as much stigma and all that, even though the undocumented issue is a big one in every state. So this is a tough one. Did you want to say something, Karen, and then we'll go to the next question?
Yeah.
Go ahead.
Many years ago, insurance, portability, and transportability.
Mm-hmm.
It was 25 pages long, and it became HIPAA and COPA. And we have the ACA, which is 2,000 pages long. And I think probably part of it is the legislature or the Congress is afraid to go in and actually make some of these changes because they don't want to open up the can for work. But at the same time,
exactly.
So somewhere along the line, some of these things need to be addressed, and how do we get them addressed without saying, "Oh, we're going to
right
into the whole thing"?
Right. And then I think the other thing we're showing is it's still such a state-specific thing that you just are reminding everything that we've said. That's why you've got to know your key people in your state and work. And I think you gave a good example of the coalitions. And Meg knows the people on special health near Dean. Ashby does. Claire does in adolescence. So all of us could, yeah. Go ahead. I think that's one of the reasons why we wanted to keep this alive and keep up on it, because honestly, the women and children are the last big thing that's discussed. And many of the concepts for adults like medical homes, kids with special health care needs, started it 25 years ago and have markers. So I think you have to be vigilant, just to your point again. Yeah. Yes.
Into Medicaid. In a lot of states, the Medicaid benefit package is very, very rich. So they will have access to these benefits, including the EPSDT services, early and preventive screening, diagnostic, and treatment services, which kind of opens up that benefits, makes that a wider range of benefits that may be available in Medicaid. On the flip side, the provider networks are often harder to find providers, especially specialists, I think, for Medicaid than for CHIP because of the way the reimbursement works. So it's hard to say. say whether they're better off or worse off. I think it depends a lot on the situation and on how those two programs were organized in the different states.
Right.
Oh, for kids with special health, because usually Medicaid is more generous than SHEP, but
yeah.
Kids with special health care needs.
Is more generous.
Oh, yeah, Medicaid definitely.
If you think, if you think about health insurance for kids with special health care needs on a spectrum, so you've got Medicaid on this end with EPSDT, early periodic diagnosis, screening, and treatment, which is federal requirement. But if it's medically necessary for a kid, even if it's not on the Medicaid state plan, it should get paid for. And then you've got incredibly limited cost sharing, if no cost sharing for kids in Medicaid on the opposite end of the spectrum in terms of robust benefits and cost sharing. You've got private insurance, so much more expensive, much more limited benefits in general. In the middle, moving more towards the Medicaid side than the private insurance side is CHIP. So still an incredibly important option for kids who can't get into Medicaid because of income, but also their families can't afford private insurance. It's this spectrum of coverage where we're trying to plug people into not only coverage, let's get them covered, let's get them a little plastic insurance card, but let's get them into the right coverage for their needs, for their developmental needs, for their behavioral, for their medical needs, and their families' financial needs.
Nice, good, yeah.
Claire, do you know of any?
I don't know of any right now. I mean, my sense is, I think we think about Maslow's hierarchy. You know, I think states are so concerned about just sort of rolling out ACA and getting these navigators on board and doing the big things that some of these innovations are just they're in the dream.
No, it hasn't happened yet, though.
Yeah,
I mean, I'm tracking, as is Mashpee on their website, all the ACOs, because I think this is an incredible opportunity. Just so people know, the ones for over 65, the pioneers, were very limited. So people didn't move out of their box of health care, and they did what they call population health, which is really panel health, covering everyone in their network. And they weren't allowed to do that. But the Medicaid folks who have the state Medicaid CMMI waiver, waivers, but they also have the innovation grants, are doing it. States like Oregon and Vermont and Minnesota are states to watch. Even the way it's organized in North Carolina and Colorado are. Basically, they're regional or county structures that really have the healthcare delivery system and the community and public health. Because community's not everything. It's all those public health functions. They're ones to watch. If you listen to Lillian Shirley, who used to be Maricopa County and is now the state director or the health commissioner in Oregon, they've actually brought it together and they've actually worked on pediatric hospitalizations, renal failure. They're actually using them to pay for home visiting. So you're right that that's where we need to go. But getting the kids in these are tough because CMMI is still using an ROI of 3 years. So very few of the CMMI programs, because we do a lot of the evaluations of them at APT, 10% of everything they've given out is kids. So we've been advocating, because you're right, there should be a lot of innovation here, and there's already a lot of innovation for what people have done with kids, early childhood, but we haven't made the impact with the health system the way we... I have not heard any of those, no. And Title V is just rushing to keep up to. In fact, we did some work in a learning network for the Title V directors. There's some of that work that's going to be on the website of North Carolina, right?
Yeah, it's actually going to be on the AmChip website, on their Transformation Station website. It's called a state assessment tool, and it's for Title V directors or Title V staff who want to kind of see where are we with regard to how the ACA is being implemented in our state. How much do we know? How much capacity do we have to be involved in these conversations?
and local community groups like Karen's can use those as well, because there's a lot of education to catch up on enrollment. We did it on benefits, systems. ACOs are really new, but the community benefits, so more to come. And then the Catalyst Center has their stuff updated, and you have all yours, Claire, too. Because this thing about the EOB, the benefits thing, I think is really important, and I've only heard Claire speak about it nationally, and I think that's another biggie. That's a good question about how to do it, because it is really hard to get it moved. And when you go to the Academy Health meetings, you don't hear much about kids. Nashville, a little bit more. People are thinking about it, but it hasn't caught up. It's really, they're worried about those adults and duals and stuff like that. High cost. Any other questions? Okay. Well, listen, thank you so much. Let's give a big round of applause. Yay!